Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.
Hello and welcome, everybody. My name is Adam Wozniak, and I'm joined here today by my good friend, co-host, and producer,
Alex Stoker. How are you doing today, Adam?
Doing all right, man. Glad to have you. So what's going on with you as you're wrapping up the summer here?
It's been good. I just finished finals. I'm kind of getting into the groove because I've got classes starting back up again in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we got a little break here.
Yeah, so I'm trying to take full advantage of that. How about you?
Same here, man. I think I'm just going to get some more hours in at work and just try to get ready to appreciate school when it starts.
Right. Well, today we have two really special guests. We have a father and son duo. We have Andy Crow and Clint Crow, and they're here with Elite Event Rental. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, thanks for having us. Good to be in the studio.
Yep.
Doing well. Yeah, thanks for having us.
So if you don't mind starting off letting us know what it is you guys exactly do, and we'll just start from there.
Absolutely. So we rent tents, tables, chairs, stages, dance floors, and linens for events and parties all throughout Metro Atlanta.
And how did you get started with that?
Andy, I'll let you take that.
Yeah, that's a funny question, Alex. I was doing events for the Boys and Girls Club in Cobb County. I was the board chair that year. And we had a rather large event. And we rented a whole bunch of stuff. And when I got the bill, I was upset about it. It seemed very high. The event planner looked at me and said, this bill's very competitive. She said, don't worry about the bill. All I want is an event rental company that will pick up the phone when I call, that will show up when they say they're going to show up and do what they say they're going to do. And that, to me, that started buzzing in my mind because I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. I was looking for some way to help my family members, my children particularly, kind of understand how to monetize their own worth and how to run a business. And I talked to Clint at a Braves game that night and pitched the idea to him.
Yeah, I was working at a gym at the time, and I really wasn't happy with where I was at the gym. And Andy told me, he said, hey, do you want to start a business? I said, in what? And he said, event rental. And I had no idea what that meant at the time, but I'd set up a couple of these events with the Boys and Girls Club before and started making calls, kind of jumped in.
Right. So that seemed like a pretty, you know, you were agreeing to that pretty much on the fly. I know lots of people, it's kind of difficult to get a business started, let alone, you know, the concept. A lot of times the hardest part is taking those first steps. But I mean, you guys seem pretty confident from the get-go. How was that?
Oh, it was good. I've been working with Andy for a long time. I was working at VelociTeach when I was 10. So yeah, I was ready to jump in.
He was our shipping clerk back then.
Okay.
So yeah, it started in the mail room, proverbially and literally. It was interesting, Alex. You said we got started from the get-go and that type thing. I think if either of us had understood what event rental meant and what was involved, we'd have probably been a lot more thoughtful about it. It is it is very hard work. It's intense labor, and you know, it's peaks and valleys.
Right.
So when it's busy, because if you notice all around our town, you'll notice that people do festivals on the same weekend.
Yeah.
You'll notice that people get married, brides get married in June. That's what every bride wants, is a June wedding. And so you look and
why?
These things happen. Well, exactly.
Why?
But so it makes inventory, it makes planning, it makes all of those things pretty tricky.
Yeah, I bet. Are there any specific things that you guys see pretty frequently, like I guess any issues with event planning that's like a frequent occurrence?
Not so much with weddings, although we have had some last minute weddings pop up where, you know, we welcomed it. We're absolutely, but we'll see people that wait till the very last minute to schedule an event, and everybody else is booked, or even we're booked out, and we'll have to plan something on the fly in order to make it happen. But the big thing there would be birthday parties or music events. They're hoping that it won't rain, and then one day, you know, the weather starts getting bad.
Yeah, the phone rings when it gets cloudy. But to answer your question, one of the things you can really there's a big gap in how these festivals are planned. So
right.
We'll do a big festival. Some of the festivals, you'll have an event planner that is very OCD, has everything planned out to the nth degree, all the checklists, all the binders, and then you have other ones that are much more fluid. And so you don't know until you get there what you're really dealing with.
There might be 20 people, there might be 200.
Well, and even more so, Adam, you don't, you know, you look at the list of things they asked for, and then you get there and they say, oh, we're going to need all of this other stuff too. So then you're sending trucks back to the warehouse, and it's it can be organized chaos.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, all right. Whenever you first heard the idea, like the, I guess, the need within a company for like event rental companies, picking up the phone on time, being there when they, you know, being there whenever they need you to be there, that sort of thing. So would it be a stretch to say that's your core competencies?
It's not our core competency, but it's funny because you're always looking. So let me give you one baseline. Every event rental company on one level does the same things. They have tents, and a lot of those tents come from the same manufacturers. They have tables. They have chairs. So, yeah, there are small differentiators there, but the real differentiator comes in just paying the price of excellence, working harder, working smarter, doing the things that your competitor isn't willing to do, and that's certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think our core competency comes down to the way we plan.
Project management.
Yeah, so how would that be different than... any other competitor, current competitor?
Well, so a lot of competitors are going to be a little bit more fluid and a little bit more chaotic. And so think about it this way. You take people who cook. And you'll have one chef who will walk into a kitchen and it is complete chaos. There's flour everywhere. There's food everywhere. And then at the last minute, it all comes together and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
When I cook, it's generally I clean as I go,
right?
And I keep things organized, and that's the best way to get your kitchen clean is have me come cook, because I love to cook. But the idea with how this translates into event rental, we plan meticulously, and we go over it, and we go over it, and over it, and over it, because there's two or three reasons. One, surprises are not your friend. If you get somewhere and you've left a pole back at the warehouse, then now you've got to send a 26-foot box truck back through traffic just to pick up one pole because it's too big to fit in a car.
Right.
If you get there and you've put too much stuff on, you know, one time we did an event early on in our history and we rented a truck we didn't need to rent and loaded it down with weights that we didn't need to carry. So, you know, you learn through things like this that plan, and plan some more pays off. And then that's where your profit is too. It's in those marginal operating efficiencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean that makes a lot of sense. You don't want to do too much, and you definitely don't want to do too little.
Right.
When a lot of these structures require a minimum number of people in order to get the tent in the air, but then if you have too many people, you reach a point of inefficiency
where
people are stumbling over each other. A truck can't get unloaded as quickly. And so planning the right number of people, and then what happens if somebody doesn't show up? You got a lot of things that go into that.
Right. And now kind of taking a step back and looking at the industry that you guys are in, especially the type of environment, it's a eat or be eaten type of environment for sure. You know, how do you guys handle, I guess, the stresses that come with that? How do you guys prepare for that type of environment?
Well, that is just part of the nature of the game there. We do get around most of that through the planning. Proper planning prevents piss poor performance.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's 6 P's of success. So in terms of the stress, a lot of that can be managed if you deal with that as much as possible up front.
Right.
Yeah, I think also, Alex, you know what? We try and thrive in that environment. So it's part of it. This has been a strange industry the past 5 years in the metro Atlanta. There's been a ton of consolidation. So there's been a lot of eating. Mm-hmm. A lot of bigger companies have been snapping up smaller companies. In fact, it's been kind of shocking.
Right.
So in that, we've done some of that as well. We've made a couple of acquisitions that's turned out really well for us. So yeah, I think that's part of it. You got to be there with an appetite and a fork and a knife.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do again with your core competency, how you mentioned work harder, smarter. So that's definitely something that's, you know, important. I just want to take a step back and talk more about the family dynamic with you guys. So, you know, it's you, Andy, and then Clint, your son. Is there anyone else from the family that's working with you guys as well?
There is, yeah.
Yeah, we also, my brother Kyle is involved on the linen aspect. He runs linens as his own line of business there. And so he's been with us for, I guess, 3 years now. And my grandfather, Theron, is very actively involved as well. He shows up a lot of the time.
Okay.
And as in almost every day.
Yeah. Okay.
Three generations. Wow.
Right. My role is a lot more hands-off. So I don't spend a lot of time hovering at the facility. I talk to Clint multiple times a day. We communicate, we email a lot, and we talk on the phone a lot. And sometimes it's humorous to look, you know, at my call list because the last dozen calls will be with him. But I try and I try and empower him and coach him the best I can, and he runs the business.
Hmm. Huh. That's pretty great to see. You know, training wheels are off. You're letting your son kind of handle things. And for you, Clint, you know, when you started off with this, did you always, I know there was a point you were working at a gym. Did you ever envision yourself working at your own company?
As long as I've been alive. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, we did our little bit of research before you guys came in, and Andy, this isn't your first rodeo. You know, you started, I think was it Blackbird?
I did.
Would you mind telling us a little bit about that and how that kind of affected you and, I guess, in a sense, prepared you for this company?
Sure. So I started a company really in 1986.
Okay.
I was in college and at Kennesaw. I started an IT consulting company. It grew. At our height, we had about 11 people working with the organization. And I crashed it spectacularly. And Alex, the beauty of that story and the real pain of it is I was just about the only... So a lot of technology companies crashed in 2000 and 2001.
Right.
But nobody crashed in 1997. That was the heyday, except me. I'm the one poster child of the guy who ran a company into the ground and kind of spectacularly. And so... walking away from that, entrepreneurialism's in my DNA. It's in my blood. But what wasn't in my DNA was the ability to understand risk and the ability to manage risk. And that's very much a part of me now. So I think about risk a lot. I started VelociTeach in 2002, and it's done great, and we've got an amazing team there. So that's been, and you've gotten to see some of that firsthand. It's been a great experience. And so I hope I never work for somebody again.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see, you know? So yeah, it's a part of who I am.
Right. And, for those of the listeners that don't already know, I am at VelociTeach right now interning. That's what Andy was referring to. It's definitely been a great experience. And, you know, back when now that we're on that page, I'm kind of curious, how is the dynamic at VelociTeach different than at Elite Event Rental? And how are those things similar? You know, what do you take away from the both that kind of crossover?
Yeah. So if you spend any time around me, one of the things I talk about a lot is alignment. And what I mean by that is having ideally individual employees' goals are aligned to their department or divisional goals. Department goals are aligned to the corporate goals. Corporate goals are aligned to their customers' goals. And in the perfect world, all of that is aligned to society's goals and society's best interests. Maybe not their goals, but their best interests. So that you have everybody moving in a way that not only benefits their department, but their company and the customer and society. I work really, really hard on that at VelociTeach, and that's something that a lot of people don't see. It's not necessarily a real visible activity, but I spend a lot of time trying to make sure things are aligned the way they need to be. We've done a lot of that with Elite. So Elite's a much younger company. It's younger in two ways. It's younger in the number of years that we've been around. We've been around 5 years now, Clint? Is that right?
This is our fifth year.
But we also have a lot of younger leadership. And so At Velociteach, we've got a rather seasoned crew. They're not old by any stretch, but they're seasoned. They've been through, they've seen up cycles, they've seen down cycles, they've seen litigation. They've lived through a lot. So it's a battle-hardened team. Mm-hmm. Elite's less so. Elite is a growing company. Now, Elite is growing a lot faster percentage-wise than Velociteach. So it's interesting to watch the two. But we're structured in a lot of ways similarly. We empower managers. Managers live and die by their decisions. You know, you always have access to advice and coaching and those types of things. But no, I do not micromanage. I macromanage. And very much so that way. I'm not up in people's business and who work for me and telling them how to run it, but they are accountable.
Right. And, you know, that's one of the things that while doing the show, we've heard a lot from different guests. It's the people that work with you that kind of really can either make your business crash and burn or succeed. You know, you definitely have to have people that are dependable. And I want to ask about that. How did you, at least in the early stages for this company, figure out how to work with the best people? Is it strictly friends, family, or is it, you know, someone that you met through a mutual connection that you knew had the skills? How did that work?
Well, so I think there was a lot of trial and error there in the beginning.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We hired friends, we hired family, we hired people I met through class, being a student at KSU. We tried a lot of different options and avenues. But over the past year and a half, 2 years, we've taken to hiring specific managers that if I'm in class and there's a situation that arises, an emergency, I feel capable that they can handle it. Like Andy said, they are accountable to it, but there's no need. They don't have to call me, interrupt me. They can handle it.
Right. And, you know, that was an interesting point that you made. So I want to ask, what's it like building a business while you're also in college?
Difficult as building a business out of college. The time constraints do mean that I'm out of the office for a few hours a day. But given the right people in management, I've got two guys, one in sales and one in operations, that I feel could run the business without me there.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of it has to do, you know, from your end, a lot of time management there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's the average day for you guys like? Is there like a lot of scheduling? Is a lot of things kind of happening spontaneously?
Most of the scheduling occurs in the morning.
Okay.
And we'll generally have a truck leaving before 10 to go set up the first event. And we have scheduled that event and planned for it the past 2 or 3 days beforehand. So we'll load the truck up a day or two in advance. And then we'll go over, we'll have a team meeting in the morning around 9, and then the first truck leaves at 10, and then we're answering calls or making deals the rest of the day.
Wow, that's, you guys are pretty busy.
Well, they do something similar to what we do at Velociteach. So every Tuesday at Velociteach, we have a stand-up meeting,
right?
And everybody in the office gets together, we're in a circle, we're standing, and we go around for a few reasons we do it this way. Stand-up to keep it short, we're an anti-meeting culture. So as a company, we do not spend a lot of time in meetings. It's not necessary. And the reason it's not necessary is that people are empowered to make decisions. What you find in companies that meet all the time is that they need consensus because no one wants to be accountable and no one wants to be responsible for the decision. And so they need everybody to agree on everything. We don't do that. We absolutely eschew that. Now, at Elite, it's fun because they have sort of the equivalent of our stand-up every day.
Absolutely.
You have a production meeting.
We do, and part of the reason behind that is that because every event is custom, you've got a different backyard, you've got a different setting, a different landscape. There are last-minute additions or changes that the customer might make, or there has to be a strong integration between operations and sales. And so we make sure that everybody's communicating. And if somebody wanted to add on linens to an order, Kyle would handle that. If somebody wanted to add a custom pipe and drape to an order, we make sure that that goes on the truck before it goes out.
Yeah, for sure. This is kind of going back now. So Andy, you are a project management author.
I am. Yeah, so, I've written a few books on project management.
Now, how is that similar and different to running your own business or businesses?
It's funny, you know, everything in project management, Alex, comes back to ultimately, it's boiled down to a very simple formula that W. Edwards Deming came up with a long time ago after World War II, and it's plan, do, check, act, which he revised to plan, do, study, act. And it's this idea that you plan, you execute, and then you compare the planning to the results, and you make small adjustments. So this is funny. Let me give you that in an example. One of the things I have my team at Velociteach do is create forecasts.
Right.
Okay. They're going to forecast the business for a particular quarter, for the current quarter, for the next quarter, for a period of time. Part of what I'm looking for in that is not just a number for planning, but it's the accuracy. I want to see how good are they at forecasting, at reading the tea leaves. So we've started doing the same thing at Elite. We've started that plan, do, check, act cycle through forecasting the results of the quarter. And I'm more interested in helping to develop those traits. So everything in project management boils down to that formula. We pay a lot of attention to it through and through in running the business. It is, even though business has to be a little more dynamic than a project.
Right. So, and now going back and continuing on the, you know, your time as an author, you work closely with PMI and the PMBOK, correct?
The PMBOK guide. Yeah, that's a part of my life.
And that's something that's it's going to get updated pretty soon. So how is that changing the dynamic of how you're working?
Well, so we get access to the PMBOK guide is a standard. It's the ANSI standard on project management. And it's an interesting book, Alex, because it's very thorough. It's one of those things that is maybe a little more theoretical than practical. So very few people manage their project by flipping through the PMBOK guide. But it does give you a great theoretical base. And yeah, it's getting updated, and that is taking up a lot of my time. It happens every 4 years, and we're in the middle of an important update cycle right now.
Right. And how much of those skills from project management would you say go into Elite Event Rental?
There's a lot.
Because I'm sure there's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a lot. So we'll, right off the get-go, all of our planning, all of our executing, I think that ties back to the project management. He mentioned earlier that it is meticulous. We spend the majority of the morning going over what could go wrong, risks associated with it, and how to optimize efficiency there. So half of it is making sure nothing goes wrong. Then the other half is making sure we make a good profit off of it.
And we regularly go back and debrief and have a lessons learned. And so in project management, one of the questions you ask when you're talking about lessons learned is you say, what would we do differently if we had to do this again? That's the question. It's no blame associated. We're not looking to string anybody up for it. We're just trying to ask a very simple question. Hey, if you had this event to do all over, what would you do differently, knowing what you know now? And we document those back. So we have, you know, sometimes we have big festivals. And the first time you do a festival, a particular festival, there's a lot of risk. A lot of things can come out of nowhere and get you. And so we'll do a lessons learned later. We document all that back into it. So the next time we're planning for that festival, we pull up that document and go back and say, oh yeah, you know what? And that's just basic project management.
Right.
Now, were there any times when you were going through one of those like project management reassessment meetings, particular or like impactful, like adversities you had to overcome, or any interesting stories from that? Like if something crazy happened?
Well, so we've had an event that we lost money on before, and it wasn't the type of event that the customer was unhappy. I think the customer was very happy. We did it for a lower price than we should have, and everything went well from their standpoint. But from our standpoint, we took a $30,000 job, and it cost us $33,000. And so one of the big impacts from that is, how could we go about this next time so that we make money? I think part of it was, we scheduled a crew that was too large, trying to account for doing a good job the first time. And there was a learning curve to that. There's a concept in Japanese management called Kaizen. It's continuous improvement. And that's part of the reason we do these lessons learned, is so that we can go back next time and do a better job, this time make money at it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. So in that specific case, or I guess similar cases where you either don't make as much profit as you would like, or you end up losing money, you know, are any of those clients repeat clients? So you have a chance to, I mean, you got the job done, you lost some money, but you were able to maybe establish a relationship with that client. They liked what you did and you go back to see them. How often is that a thing?
In this particular case, this was a repeat festival that we had for several years. And so we did get the job again the next year, and we did make money at it. For something like a wedding, that is a one-time event. But
I don't know. Some people do make a habit of getting married repeatedly.
But when we work with a wedding planner, sometimes they have the same setup, or they have the same package that they like. And so I'd say that's an outlier there.
Yeah,
it's not a normal case. But when it does occur, we try to make sure it doesn't occur again.
And you know, one of the things in that is that I don't think the customer ever knew that we were suffering or struggling with that. We're not going to make our problem their problem in that case. That's something that we felt, and we kind of had an instinct at the time that things were going to overrun on our side. But, you know, then it wasn't until we tallied everything up afterward that we realized, oh no.
Yeah. It's more like kind of get the job done, worry about it later.
Right.
No, not counting weddings, but were there any events that y'all got to maybe enjoy yourselves? Like y'all got to hang out?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. So we just had the Atlanta Steeplechase this past year back in April, and we got to set up, part of the deal with our sponsorship was we got to set up a tent and invite family and friends, whoever we wanted. And so we got to enjoy the Steeplechase in the VIP section. It was a good time.
But that was an interesting size event. So there were 40,000 square feet of tents that we put up. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, that's pretty sizable, because a big house, you know, will be 4,000 square feet. And so this was like 10 large houses worth of tenting.
Yeah, so you set up a neighborhood.
Right, a small development.
Called it a tent city.
Wow. How long does it take y'all to set that up?
That particular installation was 3 full work days, 3 full 8-hour days.
Wow.
And that's like full feature, like linen tents or?
Yeah, and we had budgeted 5 just in case, but we had an extra day for getting on the straps and making sure the weights were in good place, everything was staked down. And then we had an extra day to walk through it with the client, make sure everything was good from their standpoint.
Now, I'm not too familiar with, because I haven't been to a lot of festivals in a while. I mean, and the ones I go to, there are not a lot of shade and tents, you know. But are these like air-conditioned tents, or they all have fans? Walk me through a little bit of the product.
Yeah, so we offer that option. This particular event did not have air conditioning, but
Dang it.
So we offer tents anywhere from a 10-foot by 10-foot all the way to an 80 by 250. And these have optional sidewalls. They can be weighted or staked, meaning they could be set up in grass or on asphalt. And there are heating options, there are fans, there are cooling options and AC. We do an install for Kennesaw State where we put in televisions. And some of them get pretty involved.
They have lighting. You can have liners on the inside with nice fabric. I mean, there's a whole lot of options. So don't think about just, you know, some old army tent leaning to over here.
Some
of
these tents
are really nice.
These are like fancy, you know.
Some of them, yeah.
Wow. This, I guess, just generators and all that? Like, I don't know how specific y'all want
to be. Yeah, we've got generators. We had been subrenting some in the past, and we just bought two this past year.
Is solar a thing?
We don't have solar, but it is a thing. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's funny too. Clint just mentioned something about subrenting, and it's a funny thing about this business that's different than any other business I've ever worked in. Most businesses I've worked in, you're competitive, and you have competitors out there, and you compete against them. In this business, there's that, but a lot of times somebody will come up with a large event, and they'll say, hey, we need 400 of a particular kind of chair, particular color, particular pattern. And maybe we only have 250 of those. Well, then we'll have to put together a deal with a competitor and go to them and say, hey, we need 150 Shivari chairs of this kind, or we need 150 black folding chairs like this. And you do deals with your competitors almost weekly.
It's an entire line of business.
It's interesting.
Very common thing.
Yeah.
So I guess you would have, like, with your competitors, you got to have a decent relationship with them, right?
We do. And we work very hard.
So that is unique.
It is unique.
Yeah.
I know the people in the project management industry. Most of them I have a great, great relationship with, where we communicate regularly and that type of thing. But we don't collaborate that often. This, right, we do.
And that's interesting, because that definitely plays on what I learned in one of my classes. I can't remember who exactly said the quote, but it was amongst the lines of, the worst thing for any business is a weak competitor. So in this case, definitely, if you guys don't have those chairs that you need, you're hoping that your competitor does. And that's an opportunity for you guys to work together. And, you know, it helps your event and it helps them because you're doing business with them.
And we've had events where we needed help. We needed to subrent equipment. And we've had competitors that need to subrent equipment. So fostering those relationships, we went and got drinks with a competitor last week, actually.
Oh, wow.
Anything from, you know, doing business with them to having a relationship outside of business as well.
And that gets back to the point that everything gets done through relationship. Mm-hmm. People pay so much attention to search marketing. Search marketing's great. Now, I know Amazon, I don't have a relationship with Jeff Bezos, and I still buy from them. But when it comes to local businesses, people do business with people they like, and that is a fundamental truth. So that's an important thing.
There was an entire summer, last summer, where I went around to all the competitors, and I had introduced myself before, but we sat down and we talked about subrental pricing and just, hey, this is what we can offer you. And we saw a large return from that.
Now, whenever you entered the market, was there any like animosity, like, oh, new guy on the block is going to try and, you know?
I wouldn't say it was animosity. They looked at us like we were crazy.
Right.
So why would you want to do this?
This is real work, guys. And it is. You know, it's tough. It can be very manual labor and very intensive, and it is tough, and it's incredibly competitive. So there probably are easier ways to make a buck.
Mm-hmm. And then just jumping into like a already established market.
But you know what, Adam? That it's part of it's that it's established, but part of it too, it's lower tech. Mm-hmm. And so that to me is actually very appealing. I've worked in high tech a bunch of my career. I worked as a C++ developer in Windows for about 15 years, and I understand technology well, and it's been fun to get in on the low tech side.
Yeah. Because it's like, you know, how many things can go wrong with a folding chair?
Well, you might be surprised.
Yeah. Not a lot of bugs there.
If it's dirty. Okay.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
If it's mechanically messed up,
there's a screw missing. Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
It's not that low tech.
I think we can say.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure you guys have seen a lot of things on the job. Have there been any particular horror stories that you guys want to share? Again, like maybe a chair collapsed or something, you know.
You know what? We've learned a lot.
Yeah.
And one of the best ways to learn, Alex, is through other people's mistakes. And so back this spring, there were some awful storms that blew through. And it was one of those things that we saw it coming.
Yeah.
We had assets all over the city at this point. It was a very busy time. And then I started getting texts that that there's a news story that there's a tent down in Atlanta. It had crashed. It had collapsed.
Wow.
That same day, one in Peachtree City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm sick because I was just sure it was one of our assets. And, you know, when that happens, I mean, there's a lot of things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
But a tent falling could easily kill somebody. So that's no joke. You know, it's not the tent that you're worried about initially. You're worried about the people involved, those kind of things. Well, it wasn't ours.
Okay.
As it turns out, it was a competitor's. And so the best kind of horror stories are the ones that you get to learn from other people's misfortune. We've definitely had some operational things on our side, and it just kind of makes you go back and be more careful.
Right. You just got to learn from it.
Well, part of it was we went to, my brother and I went to tent school in South Carolina.
Did you know there was such a thing?
I had no idea.
Yep. So actually the week after finals, they have a tent school put on by one of our manufacturers, Top Tech, and they hold a 3-day, all-day deal where they teach you the proper ins and outs of setting up this equipment the right way, manufacturer spec. So we'd been setting them up for 2 years and realized there were just a couple small different things that we could be doing to help pooling with water, help ratchet down tension on the straps. So it ended up, there were a lot of things we learned from that that helped improve the quality of the tents.
Yeah, I'm sure. Wow. So I just want to take a second and say thank you both for coming today. It's been great, and I'm sure we could talk all day. But we do have two more questions left for you guys.
Sure.
And kind of, you know, one of them is going to be for both of you guys individually. But if there is one thing that you know now that you wish you could tell your previous self when you were starting off, you know, some kind of advice, what would that be?
Mine would be to look at auctions.
Look at auctions.
Yeah. We got a lot of great equipment through auctions for a fraction of the price that we did buying it new.
Really?
Yeah.
What's an example of one of those things?
Well, that 80 by 230, for example, is...
80 foot by 230 foot
yeah,
tent.
Wow.
Very yeah. large tent.
A very large tent. We got for the same price that we bought about five other tents, large tents new. So and it's in great condition, good tent. But when we can get that asset cheaper, we're still renting it at the same price.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. That's crazy. I would never thought.
Pennies on the dollar. So yeah, I think mine, Alex, would be to take a little bit of a longer view and relax some on some of the day-to-day things that would stress me out early on.
Like what?
You know what? When an event wouldn't go just exactly the way I hoped it would go, mm-hmm. I tend to have a type A personality. And I tend to zero in on those things. And I think to some degree, you got to expect some of that. And you can step back and look at this as a long term, as Clint said, Kaizen, it's continuous improvement. Mm-hmm.
It's a great answer for both of you guys.
Yeah. Now, and before we wrap up, is there any contact information or, you know, Twitters or anything like that you want to give out?
Yeah. So our website is eliteeventrental.com. That's all singular. And our phone number is 678.
Oh, you forgot.
Busted.
This is so funny.
774-8368. Tent. Yeah.
There we go. We'll get that out on our Twitter.
678-744-TENT.
We'll get all that out.
No
there.
Worries. We'll get it out.
Thanks.
No problem.
Awesome. All so right. Thank you guys again. So this was Andy Crow and Clint Crow, and they are here with Elite Event Rental. And this is Biz Radio U. My name's Alex Stoker, and I'm here with my co-host,
Adam Wozniak.
And thanks, thank you guys.
Thanks, guys. It's been an honor.